Well, welcome to a very special interview that's being conducted in Santa Cruz, California. And I have with me here Linda Holliday, who's written a book, Journey to the Heart of Aikido. And we're going to talk about both the book, how it came to be that she spent a long period of time doing that, and what difference it makes if you live in Palmer, Alaska, or anywhere in the world. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
This is a book that I would put in that category, Labor of Love. Tell us how long it was, or when, better yet, when did you first have the idea that you would embark in writing a book?
Yes, I would put it in the category of Labor of Love also. I didn't actually set out to write a book. I set out to preserve and convey the teachings of my Aikido teacher, Motomichi Anno Sensei, who was a direct, and still is, a direct student of the founder of Aikido. And those direct students of the founder of Aikido all got something very special from the founder, and they are elderly at this point, and that generation is passing away quickly. So I had the opportunity to study very closely with Anno Sensei and bring him to California starting in 1999. I brought him once or twice, sometimes more than twice a year, for a period of years. And I noticed that he was so heartfelt and beautifully skillful in conveying these teachings of Aikido that he got from the founder, that I started to feel that perhaps it should become a book, that would be a way of reaching out to a wider circle of people than the people who he was meeting personally in his seminars.
Okay. Now, you have had a lengthy history with the art. I took the time to read a good portion of the book, and I was struck by the chronology, starting when you were reasonably young. You were how old were you when you first stepped on a mat?
I was 18.
18. Okay.
I was a first-year college student in Santa Cruz, here in California, and I was a student of art and music. And I had no intention of studying martial arts or anything like that. But my school had a very interesting requirement for the first-year students in the arts college, and we needed to take something, a class that we had never taken before or that we thought we'd be bad at. Okay. And so Aikido seemed like the thing to take. I figured I would have no talent.
Okay, so you had no athletic prowess that you displayed?
No, I was very intellectual.
Okay.
And, very comfortable with intellectual pursuits, but not so much the physical.
Okay.
And that was in 1970.
All right, a while ago. So, do you remember clearly the first experience, or what did you feel when you did step on the mat and you were asked to do something?
Well, I remember the first time I saw it. I went to a demonstration before the class started.
Okay.
And I saw my first teacher, who was Robert Frazier, a sensei who actually also studied with the founder of Aikido, one of the few Americans who had considerable experience with the founder. He was teaching in Santa Cruz at UCSC. And I remember going to a demonstration and just being curious. I didn't know why people were doing what they were doing. It seemed like a form of movement and so on that I'd really never seen before, and it puzzled me. And then when I actually went in and got on the mat myself, what I really related to were these mind or ki exercises that my teacher taught, where you would extend your ki, your energy and your mind, and center your body, and then you'd be able to do things that you normally wouldn't be able to. Like there's an exercise called unbendable arm, where your arm becomes quite strong, but in a relaxed way, as long as you are extending your ki, as they say, this vital energy. And that fascinated me. That completely hooked me from the beginning.
Okay. So then you began training in a more regular way.
And a regular way at that point was only twice a week, because okay. that's all there was. And there was very little Aikido anywhere in California at that time. I was at the beginning of Aikido in America.
Right. So, next step then. Where do you go after twice a week? How do you begin to extend your training as well as your ki?
Well, at that point I was studying with the two teachers in Santa Cruz, which were Robert Frazier and Frank Duran, who is a very well-known teacher at this point, who's based in Redwood City, California. And they each taught once a week. And then the next year, they expanded the program. I believe it was Stan Pranin who joined the instructional staff at that point, and he would come up from Monterey, and he taught a class on Fridays. So I was training Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So basically, I increased my training as it was available.
Okay.
And there were also a few dojos over the hill, as we say, in the Bay Area of California, and I would go there for classes occasionally with Robert Nadeau Sensei and others, and go to seminars. It became so interesting that I started doing Aikido more and more, as much as I could, never dreaming really that I would go to Japan and study there.
So talk a little bit about how it was that you got to Japan. I mean...
Well, kind of by accident. I mean, it all just sort of happened. I didn't start out to become an Aikido teacher or an author or someone who had dedicated her life to Aikido. This just all kind of happened. One of my good friends who in Aikido suddenly said to me one day, I think I'll go to Japan and study Aikido there. And I thought, you can do that? I had no idea. And no one in my family had ever traveled anywhere. I just would never have considered going to Japan. But as soon as he said it, I thought, well, if he could go there, I guess I could go too. And so the two of us actually went together in 1973, the spring of 1973.
So at that point, did you have some time frame thinking you'd be there for a short while?
A couple of months,
okay.
You know, it seemed like the thing to do. I was 20 years old. I didn't have a whole lot of plans. But I did have to take some time off from my studies at the university,
okay.
which I did. I took a leave of absence. And then we went off to Tokyo. That was all we knew about, really. And that was that is, in fact, the Aikikai, the world headquarters of the Ueshiba family Aikido group. And, we went there and trained there for a couple of months, maybe 2 or 3 months.
Okay, now, at this point, and I'm talking here with Linda Holliday in Santa Cruz, some years after her first exposure to Aikido and first trip to Japan, just to remind, you went there, but you did not speak Japanese, and you had a beginning experience with Aikido that was intriguing.
Yes, I had trained actually for 2.5 years at that point.
Okay.
But not hard. You know, I hadn't been training incredibly intensively, just enthusiastically, very enthusiastically.
Okay.
And I always had a hard time with the rolling and the falling. You know, I hadn't had a sports background. I had a stiff back. You know, I was not a natural, let's say.
Okay.
But I was just so excited by the possibilities that were so clear in the Aikido training of the unity of mind and body and the self-defense capabilities and all of the great things in Aikido that went off to Japan fairly unprepared in a way for the very rigorous physical training, the hard mats, and the fact that everyone spoke Japanese over there.
Okay.
And I did not. I had studied a little bit, just a little, before I went. Yeah, like a tourist would. And I didn't expect to stay very long. But when I got there, it was just amazing, the experience I had at that point, going to the Aikikai main dojo in Tokyo, and the teachers that were teaching there, and Osensei, the founder of Aikido, had died 4 years ago, just 4 years ago. So his memory was very fresh. The teachers seemed just filled with ki and inspiration, and I was amazed. I was just inspired.
Now, you've mentioned the founder of Aikido, And as he has a history of his own, what would you say at this point was so different about Aikido from the variety of other moving and martial arts that were available to anyone and still are available today?
Well, I can say now some things that might be different or the same about Aikido, but just to mention, at the time, I wouldn't have known.
Right.
I mean, what background did I have? I mean, I had friends that had more of a background in karate or judo or something like that, and those are more competitive. Those are competitive martial arts forms, and one of the main differences that one sees right away with Aikido, that Aikido is non-competitive. It is a non-competitive practice where people are mutually supporting each other in learning. And I think for me that was probably the only way I could have gotten into this, you know.
Right. Right.
And I still think it is an absolutely marvelous aspect of Aikido that allows people of all types to undertake the study of Aikido and to derive tremendous benefit from it, both in a physical and mental or even spiritual way. The non-competitive, mutually supportive aspect of the practice. There's no fighting, even though there's no sparring and no tournaments, no weight categories. It's not like that. It's very inclusive.
Well, so let's pick up the thread of the story. You're in Tokyo, you don't speak Japanese, but you're very much impressed with the training that's going on. So you begin to train, and how long do you stay in Japan? How does that work?
Well, I had a tourist visa.
Oh, that.
So actually, my first day in Japan was exactly 1 year, strangely enough, because that was what my tourist visa allowed after I had renewed it twice and then gone to Korea to renew it again, coming back into the country, and then renewed it twice more. That got me to exactly a year, and I had a return ticket in my pocket. And okay. So I didn't stay longer than a year the first time. I went back and basically worked to, try to save money and get back to Japan, because that's all I wanted to do at that point.
Okay.
Overall, I spent, during that time in the 70s, I spent 3 years living and training in Japan. And then since that time, I haven't resided in Japan. I go back, since 2000, I've been going back once a year, sometimes twice a year, for a visit and to continue my interviews with Ono Sensei, my teacher.
Okay. So in those times in between being in Japan, when you came and earned some money to return, you continued to train here?
Yes.
Okay. And did you notice, obviously people look and say, there's training in Japan, there's training here, there's an evolving art. Dojos are beginning to spring up and grow, and the training levels are rising. Any comment about what you began to notice about how training was happening here compared to Japan?
That was the mid-70s. I came back. I felt like I was completely changed. It was a really life-changing experience for me to go to Japan. At that point, I'd spent a year in intensive training in Japan, and in very intense and kind of very personal, intimate training circumstance in the town of Shingu, which we haven't talked about yet, but that's where I ended up training, not in Tokyo so much. And I was immersed in Japanese culture. So, and it was a highly formative time of my life. You know, I turned 21 when I was in Japan. So when I came back, everything looked different to me. I felt, the first months or so, I felt like I was a foreigner in my own country. That's kind of how much the experience had changed me.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of my impressions at that point were from that vantage point, was just feeling like I was Japanese in America, which obviously was not, but there was a feeling that I had. And I had come back from a place where one of the things I noticed is that the training was much more easygoing here, which is really what enabled me to start it when I had started, when I was 18. And when I came back, I had my black belt, and I'd been just going at it, just hours a day, training all the time. And I came back and it would, be like, oh, there's a class. and go for a class, and it wouldn't be a workout.
Oh, okay.
Or not so much. Let's just put it that way. You know, compared to where I'd been, which is, let's say, fairly extreme. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things I noticed. But, of course, since that time, since Aikido began in California, came over in California, it's evolved tremendously. And so I don't want to give your listeners the impression that this is still the case. This was back in the 70s. And since that time, Aikido has evolved tremendously. And there's also been a lot of back and forth between various people going to Japan, coming back, and teaching people who've been in Japan, coming back here and teaching. So I would say the quality and the intensity and the high-level instruction and so on now in California is, more equivalent to what you would find in Japan.
Right. And so the real question revolves around, in my mind, your original experience with Aikido. In our busy lives, very often, people might have 3 or 4 days a week where they can train, or maybe more.
But maybe two.
Or maybe two, and maybe for 2 hours at that time.
That's right.
So this feels like a significant difference than training, as many people have here during seminars, where there might be 4 or 5 trainings in a day for a week. And if I've had experienced that, and I know that seems impressive to my body and to my mind, but to think of doing that
as a lifestyle,
right, suggests that I would have a much deeper conversation with my body and mind.
Yeah.
So
you get into a certain shape for
right.
that, and it requires you to get in shape. It's get in shape or not do it, I guess.
Okay.
But you know, I was in my 20s.
Right.
You know, I'm 61 now. I train now, but I don't train nearly as vigorously as I used to. And Aikido being non-competitive is something that people can train in a way that fits them. So the people who train twice a week and they come in for an hour and a half class twice a week are great, are getting a tremendous amount out of their training. And then there are some people who train 5 or 6 times a week, or people who do more than that. But that's unusual.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's important to note that Aikido is good at any speed.
Very nice. Very nicely put. So we have you now after 3 years in Japan. You have a black belt. Presumably you're going to make a decision about what you're going to do with your life in terms of work or activity or focus. How do you come to that point where you say, I think I'm going to do Aikido as my day job? Or
But I didn't.
But you didn't.
I didn't come to that point. Just kind of happened.
All right. Well,
so, can I tell you?
Sure.
Yeah. So when I did move back from Japan, you know, at a certain point I thought I would just live in Japan. But then I just did decide to come back. And then all I really wanted to do was train. I just loved Aikido, and I still do. I just love Aikido. I like doing it. I like thinking about it. I like doing it with other people. And now I like teaching it. But I didn't have any intention to teach. I just wanted to do it. But when I got back from Japan, where there were so many high-level Aikido teachers, I was clearly just a student over there. When I got back here, and at that point I think maybe I had a Nidan second degree black belt. There weren't so many of us at that level here in California. And so I was called upon to teach. I was drafted into teaching.
Okay.
And I kind of resisted it at first. I didn't think I'd have much to offer. I'd just come from Japan where, you know, a Nidan was not considered a teacher at all. So my good friend Jack Wada, who had also been in Japan, he was teaching in Santa Cruz at that time when I got back. It was wonderful. I loved training in his classes. And then he decided to go back to Japan and do some more training, and he handed over the UCSC Aikido Club and classes to to me over my protests. And he said, I'm sure you'll do a good job. I'll just be gone 6 months. Thanks for doing this. And then 6 months later, he sent me a letter saying, I'm not coming back. So, okay. And I grew to like teaching because, right. Not because I thought, oh, I am the great gift to Aikido and I should be teaching everyone, but because there was a need, someone needed to teach, and I saw that there was a good effect on the students, that I saw students training and learning, and so I decided, okay, I'll do this.
So I've had the great pleasure of visiting the dojo here in Santa Cruz and training here, and I find it to be a wonderful environment. I have to speak of it as an environment. It's a very welcoming place. It's light. It's encouraging. That wasn't the situation when you first started as an instructor. That building didn't exist in that form.
That's right.
So in the few remaining minutes we have here in the first half of our discussion, bring us up to date. How did that place come to be?
Yeah, so I was teaching up at UCSC with a club and the classes there, and I just decided that over time, I thought, you know, we really should have a dojo, a community dojo, because you can do so much more with a community dojo. And so I got together a group of people. This is over time. A group of people who were also interested in supporting that. And we formed a group. We actually formed a corporation to help with the structure of things, because I didn't want to be the Lone Ranger on this.
Right.
And then we rented a building. It was in 1982. And remodeled the building. It was so exciting to have our own dojo. And we started children's classes as well as a more full offering of classes for the community. And then that building was foreclosed on almost immediately. And then we made plans. We moved to a different building. And then at that point, I thought, really, if we want a home for Aikido in Santa Cruz, we should buy a building.
Uh-huh.
So it took... It's a long story, but it took us 10 years of fundraising. But we actually bought our own building, and that's where we are now since 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And it is our dream come true, this wonderful facility for Aikido, with not only the big mat area, but a lot of rooms that are very helpful for the people who come in. We have a kids' playroom, and we have a kitchen, and we have showers, and it's really a great facility for a home for Aikido on the central coast of California.
Right, nicely located, and a very busy place. What I was impressed with on the visits most recently was what I would call the cross-generational aspect of young people, not only, say, junior classes, children's classes, but as I observed the people who are participating in training at other levels, that there were people of all ages, all body types, and it obviously wasn't a place where you had to be a particular form, fit a certain characteristic in order to be out there.
I'm so happy that you got that impression, and that in fact it is true. It's a very deeply held value of mine, and I think one of Aikido itself, to be inclusive and empowering of everyone.
Okay.
So, for instance, we have someone training with us now who is recovering from a stroke. He can actually barely walk. Before his stroke, also he did Aikido, and Aikido is actually part of his rehab. Just doing the practice as much as he can. And I am very happy that Aikido itself is very inclusive of people who are older, like me, and also that younger people find Aikido to be very exciting and engaging as well. Yeah, I love the intergenerational aspect.
Great. Well, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and just to remind listeners, I'm here with Linda Holliday, who has just released a book, Journey to the Heart of Aikido. And what we've done in the first half tell a little bit about her story, how it came to be that the Aikido dojo in Santa Cruz exists. It's something of its impact upon her own life and the community. But now we're going to go to the heart of the book, which is a set of stories about Linda Holliday's teacher. And we'll be back in a few moments. Well, welcome back, Linda Holliday. Now we're going to go and focus on the book itself and some of the more important things the book is about. But I have identified it as Journey to the Heart of Aikido. There is a subtitle beneath that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, the subtitle is The Teachings of Motomichi Anno Sensei. And Motomichi Anno Sensei, who is an 8th degree black belt in Aikido and is now 83, he had the great good fortune of being a direct student of the founder of Aikido, Mori Heiueshiba, who died in 1969. So for those last 14 years of the founder's life, Anno Sensei had the opportunity to study directly with him. And this makes him one of the world's resources on Aikido. And as I mentioned earlier, this generation of teachers, very special teachers of Aikido who studied directly with the founder, are now, in the natural course of things, elderly. Many of them have passed away. And so it becomes more and more of a precious resource. More and more of a precious resource for the Aikido community and anyone who is interested in the teachings of Aikido, these teachings. And he is my primary teacher in Aikido, though I've had numerous teachers who I value tremendously. But when I went to Japan and did my several years of intensive training there in the town of Shingu, in the remote area of Kumano, he was one of the senior teachers there, and he and the other teachers there just were so generous and very personal in their teaching. There were three of us young Americans there at that time, that I really came to feel that he was kind of my heart teacher. And when I had the opportunity many years later in 1999 to bring him to California for the first time to my dojo, I found that he could communicate from the heart, not only in Japan, but here in America, in the West, and that people really related to his teachings and felt a great deal of inspiration from both the physical and the verbal and mental, spiritual teachings that he was conveying. So the teachings of Motomichi Anno Sensei have come from many years on my part of interviewing him and following him around from class to class and having conversations with him and recording them to catch these beautiful moments of teaching where he explains the teachings of harmony and of peace and of love and gratitude and purification that are at the heart of Aikido and how they relate and are integrated in the physical practice.
There are many stories in this book. I haven't quite finished it all, but I've come across a number of them that capture the essence of what you're saying in a variety of ways. Are there a couple of these stories that, as you think about the book, and having spent a lot of time, I'm guessing, deciding how are you going to place them, etc., that stand out as capturing the essence of the essence, if you will?
That's a tall order, the essence of the essence. I think it is very a special part of the book when Anno Sensei, in his own words, describes the founder of Aikido from his direct experience, because it was, you know, he was a very inspiring person, the founder, who showed the potential of human beings, both on a physical level and on a kind of energetic level. And so Anno Sensei, for instance, describes the experience of being thrown by the founder of Aikido on the mat, mm-hmm. and the sense of disorientation that he would have actually just walking towards him with the intent to attack. And this is something that the founder of Aikido, you look at his words, and he says, you know, when a person has the mind to fight with me, if I'm unified with the universe, with nature, if the person has a mind to fight with me, he is defeated from the beginning. Well, Anno Sensei tells these stories from a first-person perspective of the person who is walking, going towards O Sensei with the mind to attack, and that he would feel that he had somehow lost his power by the time he reached O Sensei, and then he was supposed to push him or pull him or, you know, strike him, and it just would turn into something that he just didn't anticipate at all. It'd be like pushing on emptiness, he said. So these stories can sound kind of like fantasies, but then when you hear them from someone who was there and who you trust, then they come to have more solidity, and you think, oh, well, maybe that's something that's in some way possible for me too.
Well, I know that we have listeners who may be familiar, have trained with Aikido, and we may have some listeners that are not as familiar with the practice of the art. How would you describe perhaps the way Anno Sensei conducts a training session that would illustrate this core approach when we talk about attacking, for example? Many people may not be aware of the partner practice that happens and the two positions. Talk a little bit about that.
Aikido is normally practiced in a group setting, and then a teacher will demonstrate, will talk some, sometimes not very much, and sometimes more, and demonstrate an Aikido technique which normally involves two people, and sometimes more, but usually it's two people. One person is providing what we call an attack, which might be a strike or a grab or a push or a pull, and the other person is, you could say, responding or adapting to that attack and that attacking energy and physical commitment in a way that expresses the principles of harmony rather than opposition, that in essentially a nonviolent way. And so pretty much all Aikido classes are structured this way. And then after that demonstration, then people will go into pairs and practice. And then they'll watch the teacher again. Everyone will sit down and get another tip, verbal or physical, and then they'll go into pairs again and practice in this non-competitive way where even though it's challenging, it's mutually supportive. The two people are not trying to make points off each other, but actually strengthen each other. So Anno Sensei follows the same format. I think, you know, part of what he brings to his classes, which you could say is special, is not so much the techniques that he does or how he structures the class, but just who he is. Mm-hmm. He walks into the room, people tend to feel something when he walks in the room, and he walks in the room in a very unassuming way. So part of actually what people find inspiring about Anno Sensei is his humility. He doesn't hold himself above other people, even though he has every credential, you could say every right to do so. But he sees the practice as brothers and sisters walking the path of Aikido together. And when he speaks, that's the feeling that you get. It's very empowering and it's very disarming. So people in his classes, even when they're listening to him speak, tend to feel, oh, I'm in this. I'm included in this.
Right.
And this is maybe some kind of innate knowledge that I already have in my heart, and I want to be able to express it with my body.
I think I've had the pleasure some years ago of training at a seminar here in Santa Cruz where Anno Sensei, I think it was the year 2000, and everything that you're saying, I can remember noticing how I felt more as a colleague, I guess. I don't know, in the process, not that I had anywhere near the skill, but that I was part of what was happening. I wasn't someone to be just thrown as a demonstration of skill. That aspect of being in this together to learn something. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to a kind of a question, whether your own practice or whether you've noticed in Ano-sensei over the years. Sometimes a person achieves a level and they're doing very well. And yet those people that I have encountered, particularly in Aikido, who are at a very high experience level, I notice continue to strive to learn something more. Talk a little bit about that.
It's a lifelong training if you choose it to be. I mean, you can go as far as you like, and some people will train and then they'll train for just a little bit of time and they get a lot out of it and then they stop, and that's fine. Other people will keep going for a very long time, and the path just opens wider and wider, I think, and deeper and deeper. My personal feeling is that it's the mark of a successful Aikidoist, a successful student of Aikido, to be constantly interested in learning more. Because I think that is actually one of the underlying meta messages of Aikido, so to speak, that we are living, growing beings, and that we shouldn't just live in a box or just go so far and no farther.
Okay. Now, this book took you a number of years to
finish. Well, I started it in 1999, just with not really knowing what I would do with it, but I actually had one of those experiences where I was kind of talking to myself, you know, quietly, what should I do? And I really heard the voice. I heard the voice that said, make this a book. And I answered that voice, no. I am not an author. I don't write books. Okay. But it was so persistent that I kept at, that I eventually said yes. So I just started recording Ano-sensei, and that was in 1999. And then I started translating bits and pieces of it and sharing it with people. It was very inspiring. And I really kept at it. Really, it took me 14 years to finish the book. 14 years, not full time. I mean, I run a dojo, I was raising my son, I was going back and forth to Japan, you know. But especially in the most recent 5 years or so, it was quite intense working on the translations. So, you know, a lot of the book is translated from Japanese. Wow. That in and of itself was a major task. And I had studied I learned to speak Japanese in Japan, and then I came back. When I came back from Japan, I studied it academically at UCSC and also at Stanford University. So, I kind of have a scholar's approach as well, and I wanted the translation to be really, really good.
Well, certainly. Well, which leads to the next question. Ano-sensei is prominent, very important in this book. Has he had a chance to reflect upon what you have done, what you've created, and share his opinion with you?
He doesn't read English.
I understand.
He doesn't speak or read English. And for many years, after he said yes, when I asked him if I could make a book, he said yes. He gave me complete freedom and trust, and I talked with him about it a little, from time to time. And he would always say, okay, good. And then every now and then he'd say, is it done yet? And he kept saying, is it done yet? He says, I'm getting older. Is it done yet? And what's really lovely is that, I mean, I've gone over it with him and asked him and consulted with him, sure, about the book. But he basically left it up to me. You know, he would just generate more material as when I would record him, and he would say something else beautiful. And that would just add to my pile of things
to translate.
To put
into it, yeah.
But last year, when the book was done and I had a proof, it wasn't the final published book, but I had the manuscript, right, done, and I brought it to him in Japan. And what was really lovely is that after that, he asked a friend of his, or maybe she volunteered, to translate it into rough Japanese. It's not a scholarly or publishable translation, but she translated the whole thing, handwritten, into Japanese, and he read it, and he was just beautifully moved, you know, by that. And being a traditional Aikido teacher, and we have a very traditional relationship, he doesn't praise me at length. The Japanese teachers don't do that. But he said, "Those are really my words." That was like high praise, you know, like, "You got it." And he thanked me for having worked so long and hard.
Oh, yeah.
And he came last October to Santa Cruz to help with the book launch. He and his wife and one of the senior teachers in Shingu came, and it was just so beautiful to have him there and to receive the happiness of so many people who gathered to launch the book. A lot of senior teachers in Aikido in America came, and he got to stand up and, you know, speak and be appreciated for his contribution.
One of the other aspects of the book that struck me was the collection of photographs.
Mm.
Some of the old photos, and talk a little bit about how you were able to put those together, because they beautifully illustrate the concept you've been discussing.
Thank you. And the concept, we haven't used the word lineage yet, but there's a living lineage in Aikido, and Aikido is really learned person to person. So the lineage from O-sensei through his direct students, such as Ano-sensei and Hikitsuchi-sensei, who was prominent in Shingu, and then to the Western students, you know, like me, and then my students, that represents a lot of generations in Aikido, and I really wanted the photos in the book to represent that, just people really get it, that Aikido isn't something that somebody did a long time ago in Japan.
Right.
That it's right here, right now. But the old photos, which I deeply prize, Ano-sensei gave me permission to scan and make copies of a lot of these precious old photos that are in photo albums, you know, in Shingu, and are deteriorating. So I went to Japan, actually did a couple of times, and worked with a scanner and had people helping me. It was a very time-consuming process to digitize and preserve a lot of these old photographs that are of the founder of Aikido and of other senior teachers in Aikido. And the history is beautiful. I feel so honored to be able to utilize those. And also the current Doshu, or head of Aikido, I asked his permission for the use of a photo to put in the book, and he granted it in the most generous way. The picture of O-sensei, the founder, as a younger man, making a pilgrimage to Kumano.
I saw that, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So, thank you to Doshu for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm aware the book came out last year. It's in both hard and soft editions, or
no,
only soft?
No, there isn't any hardcover edition. It's okay. In a soft cover, a hard, you know, print book. And then there are, even you can get e-books,
you
know, Kindle and everything else. Yes,
okay.
Which I actually have not seen myself. I only have the print book, but I'm glad it's coming out in all the modern ways, so that all the modern people can read the book.
That's good. And let's talk a little bit about, you've mentioned the electronic versions, the book itself. Many listeners might want to know a little bit more, both about Aikido, about the book, about your travels. Where should they go? What are the best places to look, say, on the Internet or elsewhere?
There is a great place to look on the Internet. It is a website that is dedicated, actually, to the book.
Okay.
And it is www.journeytoaikido.com. So journey, just spelled like journey, and then to, T-O,
right.
Aikido, A-I-K-I-D-O.com.
Okay.
And that website has information about the book. It has short biographies of Anno Sensei and of me. It has some really beautiful pictures, okay. photos. And there's actually a press page. If you go to the contact page, and there's a separate press page that has downloadable photos. It has records of all the many of the interviews and articles that have been done about the book. So journeytoaikido.com is a lovely place to visit.
Well, very good. And I've just turned the book over to the back page. And, of course, as many books do, there are a list of people who have commented about this book. Some of them are prominent in the Aikido community, and others in a broader way. There's one Zen master here who has quoted. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, hopefully many of your readers are familiar with the name Thich Nhat Hanh. He's a very well-known international Buddhist teacher and peace activist who lives in France but is originally from Vietnam. And he endorsed the book. I was just so grateful and humbled to receive his endorsement, which the first part of it is, this book is a treasure of wisdom from the heart of a true peacemaker. I cried when I saw that. For Aikido to be recognized as such a worthy path of personal and spiritual development by someone of Thich Nhat Hanh's stature is a tremendous gift for Aikido, for the art of Aikido itself.
Okay.
And Kazuaki Tanahashi sensei also endorsed the book enthusiastically, and he is a Buddhist teacher also and a well-known, internationally known calligrapher and translator of Dogen, original patriarch of Soto Zen Buddhism. And Tanahashi sensei was one of the original students of O sensei.
Oh.
Right after the war, when he was a teenager, and he was living in Iwama and studied with O-sensei there, and it changed his life. Even though he's not currently training in Aikido, it has informed his whole life. And when he read the book, he immediately offered an enthusiastic endorsement. So I feel very grateful. And also that there have been, you know, the endorsements from the Aikido community and the senior teachers, let's say they cross organizational lines. It's not, you know, and that's one of the things I was really aiming at, is to make a book that was a resource for Aikido, the whole Aikido, and not just a small part of it. And also a resource or an interesting book for the wider community. Because I wrote it in a way that I think is, anybody could read it and find something interesting. You don't have to have special knowledge about Aikido to read it.
Okay. Although you may come away with a better appreciation, whether you're
so.
A practitioner or
yeah.
or someone looking at it for the first time. Well, we're going to be finishing up here in a moment or two. I understand that Anno Sensei is coming to visit, is he?
That's what he says. I am so pleased. You know, as he's gotten into his 80s, the traveling is not something that he does a lot of anymore. But I invited him to come this July to Santa Cruz once again. We have a summer retreat, a 5-day intensive in Santa Cruz that people come to from all over. And this year we will celebrate Anno Sensei's 60th anniversary in Aikido.
Oh.
He met the founder of Aikido and started training in 1954. So 2014 is a special year that way, and we will honor him and train like crazy. And also Mary Heine Sensei, a wonderful Aikido teacher who trained many years in Japan and has been a great help and mentor to me, will also be teaching as well as me.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Linda Holliday, I want to thank you very much for sharing both 14 years of your life into a book, more years than that into the study of Aikido and continuing study, and especially this hour with us to talk about more than just Aikido the art, but as I think the title suggests, a journey to the heart of Aikido is a very special road to travel.
Thank you very much for this interview. It's been a pleasure.